are listening to Up to Me Radio, the best in inspirational talk radio. It's up to me.
Welcome to A Healthier View. This is your host, Chris, along with co-host Beth, and we are super grateful to have you all tuning in to us today. Today's episode is really important because it's looking at something that's largely overlooked when it comes to health and wellness in the human body. Today's topic is all about walking for fitness. Beth, I'm super excited about this topic. How are you today?
Oh, I'm doing great. I'm doing wonderful. And I'm so excited we're talking about walking too, because I know that we're both in the whole health and wellness world. But when I first got into being a personal trainer, I was in college working on my degree, and I thought walking for exercise was pointless at that time. I mean, I remember thinking, if you're going to lose weight or you're going to get stronger, you really need to put the work in and go big, just like Jillian Michaels says on The Biggest Loser, go big, go big. But, and when people would tell me they've been walking to get in shape, I think, okay. But at that time in my life, I was just blind to all the remarkable research on just how powerful walking is for the human body. I mean, it's good from not only losing weight, but regulating blood sugar and so much more. And again, we need it to keep our DNA healthy. So walking, yes, can help us shed some body fat, but the most inspiring benefits of walking have to do with quality of life. And when people discover how much that quality of life is improved by just simply walking, I bet everyone is going to get jazzed about something as simple as walking your way to better health and wellness.
Well, I think so too. And I want to touch on this, and we'll save it for the next segment, but just the way walking helps with the relieving of stress. I'd really like to get into that because that's been a big part of my life, and how walking has helped with just helped me deal with stress. So, but before we do that, let's give a shout out to our sponsor, Atlanta Life Media Agency. Without them, the show would not be possible. And thank you so much to our listeners and your questions. We're going to get to these at the second half of the show as well. And as a reminder on how to contact us and get in contact with us, you can reach us at A Healthier View Podcast at uptomeradio.com. It truly does mean a lot to us to get your feedback and your remarks and your questions, because we love to share those. We know that that there are others out there that have the same questions, and to allow us to get yours and then answer them, it really is it's a testimony. And it really is it sends a powerful message to everyone out there. If you've not done so yet, please just take a minute to go to Stitcher or iTunes and download Up to Me Radio. And that's up spelled out Up, the number 2, meradio.com. And be sure to leave a rating for us. And again, it's Up to Me Radio with the letter 2. And on that note, let's get started on our topic for the day. So this episode, again, we're talking about the surprising health benefits of walking. Beth?
Wow. You know, before I get into all the wonderful things that you were talking about walking, I'd like to do a quick shout out with a howdy to Annie Blanchard from Louisiana. I actually told her I would send some virtual good wishes on this week's episode. So hi, Annie. Okay, now into walking. You know, Chris, what's so fascinating is that our ability to walk activates pretty much amazing neuroendocrine programming within our bodies. Walking makes essentially everything in our bodies work better. And we have the science to prove it. We have the research now to prove it. Whereas 20 years ago, I think people thought walking was just, you know, something you did. It wasn't something that you did for exercise or for health benefits. But I think the first place to start thinking about is what is the human body truly designed for when we talk about exercise? And this is just really an obvious observation that we probably don't think about that much. And that's what our bodies are capable and should be doing. Now, if you take an exercise like a squat, which are great, they're absolutely amazing for so many aspects of our health, from anabolic hormone secretion to obviously building some muscles. And, you know, Chris, the squats are all the rage right now because of the booty phenomenon, right?
Right.
I mean, we love Kim Kardashian. We love, right? But squats, I mean, and they do have some great benefits, especially if you're doing them correctly. But ask yourself this. Are we designed to do this repetitive motion up and down? Is that something that you would see replicated in nature? And for the most part, no, not really. And I do love squats. No disrespect to squats out there. But again, are we truly designed to do that? So in today's world, in the gym, we have to manufacture and create a kind of similar things that we would see our ancestors do. So I'm kind of getting ahead of myself, but I mean, they would move fast or they would lift heavy things occasionally, but what they mainly did was a lot of walking.
Right.
The number one exercise that we know for certain that we were designed to do is walking. And that's what our human physiology is designed to do. So, I mean, when you think about that, great. I mean, have you heard that new saying that is sitting is the new smoking? Have you heard that?
No, but that makes a lot of sense.
It does. It is. There's this new like phenomenon of saying sitting is the new smoking. So now I know there's going to be a lot of argument in our mind about the time requirement of how much real value you're going to get from walking versus doing all this other stuff. But I think the first place to start is thinking about what the human body is designed to do when we talk about exercise. I want to start with weight loss because that is one of the things that we hear and when we think when we hear the word exercise. We tend to think about the purpose of physical change when we think of exercise, even though it's so much more than that. I always tell people when I train them, eating healthy is so important. Eating healthy is the number one thing. Exercise is number two. And losing weight is just an added benefit of being healthy. So that's what I always say. Did you, I sound like you were going to say something there.
Well, I was going to ask. So when we're walking, brisk walk, regular walk, I mean, our gait changes. I think, you know, it's, I've read where our natural gait, our natural walk is built for efficiency. And so, in order to get your heart rate up, you really need to have that brisk walk. But, you know, you said the smoking, you made the smoking reference. Really, it's just getting up and moving, getting up and walking and doing something that you normally wouldn't do, you know, something other than sitting on the couch and being a couch potato.
Right.
Brisk walk versus leisurely stroll. My dad is a big walker. He takes a walk every night at 6 o'clock
for him.
Sharp, but it is not a brisk walk, and it is a stroll, and is a we call him the mayor of the neighborhood because it's really his social hour to walk from one place to the other. Stroll from one place to the other, and one person to the other, and strike up conversation. So my dad doesn't really, like I said, he strolls. He doesn't really walk, but he's up and he's moving. And I love that.
A body in motion stays in motion. And I actually said that in our last show. So, but there was this Canadian study that when you talk about brisk walking, but it found that people who walked briskly for about an hour a day decrease their belly fat by 20% after just 14 weeks without, listen to this, without changing their diets. So what is brisk? What is leisure? What is getting after it, going big? Basically, you just want to make sure that you're walking to get your heart rate up a little bit higher than your normal resting heart rate. I don't want you gasping for air. I want you to be able to talk to someone next to you. And that's going to be different for everybody. So make sure that you're getting a little sweat going on, that your heart rate's up. But again, that's going to be different for everyone. So if we were out taking a walk together, one of us might have a hard time keeping up with the other one, but that all is so individual when you talk about brisk walking. Because I know I've walked with people and I'm like, that's not walking, that's running. So that is so individualized.
Yeah, I'm naturally a fast walker. I walk every day, and I try my best to, and you know, maybe you can talk a little bit about this, the 10,000 steps. You know, I have the app on my iPhone. I'm constantly looking at that throughout the day. If I'm at the end of the day, if I'm not at my 10,000 steps, I feel like I just need to go outside and walk around the complex for a little while.
Or march in place. March in place when you're watching your favorite TV program.
That would you be can great. Do that. That's a great idea as well. We have just yesterday, we had a baseball tournament. I have a 13-year-old son, Colby, and we were at the tournament and noticed what I thought was a dad pacing, because parents do that in baseball games, especially, you know, when your kid's up at the plate or on the pitcher's mound, sort of in that spotlight position. But he was, you know, what I would consider pacing. And I asked him if he was okay, and he showed me his heart monitor on his arm, not heart monitor, but his Fitbit. And he said, I'm just trying to get to my 10,000 steps today. And I thought, what a cool way to, during the game, you're sitting there behind the chain link fence and he's moving around and he's still watching his son play, but he's taking advantage of, you know, that time. And in baseball, well, one of my best friends in high school said, he always used to say, Summers, you're not an athlete, you're a baseball player. Because there's a lot of downtime in baseball.
And, right, you know,
and
right.
Unless you're running. So during that downtime and throughout the game, he was taking advantage of it. And I found myself trying it out a little bit too. And the thing that I liked most, you know, more than just getting my steps in, is it really changed my perspective of the game, because I was able to see it from different angles.
So,
you know, normally you're sitting in the bleachers, and so I was up walking, and you know, I mentioned the stress aspect. You know, when your kids are out there competing, you always want them to do well. There is some stress. I noticed that it really calmed me down too, and so, you know, the just the up and moving. You know, yesterday I learned something, and I you will probably now find me walking around my son's baseball field as he.
There you go. Oh, you need to take some pictures. Take some pictures that we can actually put on the Up to Me Radio broadcast.
Sure, yeah.
We can put it on there.
I'll do that.
Yeah. But that's the reason I love today's topic. I love this. I don't know, because it's such a low hanging fruit topic that we need to talk about. I mean, walking is something I think is so overlooked, like you said in the beginning. And I kind of like to dive into diabetes, which is the fastest growing disease in the world, not just the Western countries. It is around the world. But I think this is amazing. There was a study that found walking after a meal significantly blunts the rise in blood sugar. So it's basically saying, if someone is walking, you can have the same benefits as an anti-diabetic medication simply from walking. Again, that's simply from walking. I mean, if someone is dealing with high levels of blood sugar, they might need metformin, they might need some insulin, whatever's going on with them. But instead, I think we need to be looking at some lifestyle factors that create the issue in the first place. And one of those big issues is many of us are not walking enough. We're not moving enough. And I mean, truth be told, honestly, because we don't really have to. I mean, have you seen that movie? What was it called a few years ago?
I know what you're talking about.
With Wally. Wally.
Wally, yes.
Yes. Wally. Wally. But I think that walking, again, can really help with those insulin levels. Just 15 minutes after you eat, if you go for a walk, your blood sugar can be down just from that. And it's not even to mention, you know, heart disease and high blood pressure and then the smoking and the stress management. And I mean, that's all really big stuff. That's all really big stuff.
Well, so walking versus jogging, jogging does get the heart rate up more. You sweat. Uh-huh. But this is something else that I've been told, and I've read places that, yes, your heart rate and the cardiovascular benefits of jogging are great. Of course, there's more impact on your joints. And, you know, the other benefit of jogging is, you know, you jog a mile versus walk a mile, you get your workout done faster, you know, if you're jogging, for sure. So what are your thoughts about the jogging versus walking? And then I'd also be curious, this is kind of on the same topic, hills versus flat surfaces. Okay. I'll let you start on the first one.
Okay, walking versus jogging. You can get the exact same benefit as you do with walking and jogging. You just have to walk more. So if you jog 3 miles, you're going to have to walk 6. You just have to double that up. So you're going to get the exact same VO2. You're going to get benefits. You're going to get the exact same benefits for your heart, for your blood sugar, for your blood pressure. All of that good stuff is going to exact same benefits. You just have to double that amount up. Plus, with jogging and running, a lot of people are going to have hip problems. They're going to have knee problems just because of that pounding. And every time you do jog, you're putting about 3 times your body weight on that joint as opposed to walking. So if you weigh 100 pounds, you're going to put 300 to 400 pounds every time you're jogging on right. that joint as opposed to walking. So walking in the long term, now I know we're going to have listeners say, oh my gosh, I've been jogging. I'm 80 years old and I've been running and jogging. I'm in my 10th marathon for the year. And that's great. Everybody is different. But on the average, you know, person, I'm going to say jogging and running can be really, really harsh on the body. You just have to make sure you have really good posture, you stretch really, really well, and that you haven't had a lot of injuries in the past. So walking versus jogging, I'm going to have to be on team walking on that avenue.
Got it. Yeah. And so what about uphill and resistance? I mean, that's something you would want to work into, I would think.
Absolutely. Right. Everything in the fitness world is level 1, beginner, level 2, intermediate, or level 3, advanced. So if you're a beginner, a level 1, you can walk some hills, but I really would work your way into that, like Chris indicated. If you want to get up there and you are doing that resistance and you're really, that really is going to be like a level high 2 or even into the 3. So, and if you have hip problems or glute issues, the glutes are big muscles. So if you're having issues with your hip, your IT band, your glutes, I would stay away from hills. I really, really would, because it's put a lot of strain on those muscles, especially the hip flexors and the IT bands.
Right. I had some issues after doing some, well, super huge hills. It was a series mm-hmm. of 3 hills on a 3-mile walk. And, you know, it's the type of hill that the only way you can get up is by, you know, leaning over, you know, leaning forward.
Exactly.
You're just trying to get 1 foot in front of the other one. But it created some back problems for me. And so I had to recover from the back problem.
Exactly.
I couldn't walk for a while because I pushed it too hard. And you know, that's sort of my mind says I'm able to run those hills at a marathon pace, but my body mm-hmm. at 43 is telling me, we're not going to do that anymore. We're going to have to slow it down a little bit and less resistance. I have another question for you. Talking about easing.
Sure.
Of course, you know, there are people probably out there listening right now that, you know, they've been pretty sedentary for a while and, you know, really wanting to get back into it again. You know, what about, and this is completely off topic, but I have a background a long time ago in physical therapy and, aquatic therapy on top of that.
Oh,
we have springtime coming up, you know, the pools are going to start to open back up again, or your local YMCA, you know, indoor pools. For folks that are, you know, really maybe trying to get back into it again, what are your thoughts on aquatic therapy and just walking in a swimming pool to offload some of, you know, your body weight and get back into, you know, the shape that you need to be in so that you can get out and start walking on dry land?
I think that's amazing. I love aquatherapy. It's really become popular in the past decade. So, I mean, the swimming, the water aerobics, and they actually have different types of classes for water aerobics too. If you want to work on coordination, if you work on flexibility, if you want to work on strength. So find one that works for you. And then piggybacking on that, for folks who need it for rehab, what an amazing, you're not having the pressure you're putting on your joints. So I think it's an excellent thing for anybody at any age, especially if you have had an injury or you're prone to injuries. Maybe put that in addition to walking 5 or 10 minutes and working your way up. I know that if you work out for 30 minutes straight, that's great because you're going to have an afterburn after your workout. But if you break your chunks up 10 minutes, 10 minutes, 10 minutes, that's still great. And I encourage people 5 or 10 minutes, 2 or 3 times a day, once in the morning, one time at lunch, one time in the evening. I mean, if you can't do 30 minutes because it's too taxing or time-wise, then break it up 5 or 10 minutes and you're great.
Yeah.
Especially if you have, you know, high blood pressure. I know for a fact, there are so many studies and so much research that, you know, walking 45 minutes a day can have a great benefit just on blood pressure and in preventing hypertension. So,
right.
There's so many benefits. I mean, it's just not losing weight. It's not about fitting into those skinny jeans or the bikinis or whatever. There's just the diabetes, the stress, I just can't emphasize that enough.
Well, okay, last question, and this is I'm going to use the S word here on the radio.
Okay.
Stretching.
Stretching.
How important? I like to take off onto a jog or, you know, a brisk walk without doing any stretching before or after. That worked out okay for me when I was younger, but as I get older, I find myself cramping up after walks sometimes, or even cramping up that night. Talk to us about how important is stretching before and after exercising?
Chris, I'm so glad you asked this question. I'm so glad you did, because I always say stretching is the most underrated form of exercise there is. I mean, stretching is so important. And I'm the same way. If I'm like, okay, I've got 45 minutes to exercise, I work out 43, I'm typically not going to take 2 minutes and stretch. I wish I would, and I'm getting better about that, but stretching is so important. I really like dynamic stretching and when you're moving with stretching, but if we're going to talk about walking and stretching, because that's what the topic is, stretching is so important for muscle control and muscle balance. Believe it or not, stretching is all about your immune health too. It helps to stimulate some of the nutrients in your body. And just when you walk and you stretch, you're going to digest your nutrients far better in your body than when you're stagnant and you're not stretching and you're not walking. A body in motion stays in motion. I'm going to say it again. So stretching is really important, even on the days that you don't per se exercise. Like if you get up in the morning, you do a really quick stretch before you get out of bed, your muscles are still kind of warm. So yes, stretching is really important. And I encourage people to stretch every day, a couple minutes, just throughout the day. You're really going to benefit from it.
Well, and
so the bottom line is we all need to move and we all need to stretch and we all need to walk. That's what I'm saying.
Well, those are words of wisdom.
And of course.
Let's use that to wrap up this first segment, and we'll go to a commercial break. thank you all for listening and stay tuned. Coming up after the break, we have a segment we like to call Ask Beth and Chris. We'll be right back.
It only takes a minute to find out if you may have prediabetes, and you can do it at doihaveprediabetes.org. But you're probably not going to, are you? Kids, work, listening to the radio. You're busy, which is great because busy people can't get prediabetes. Oh my, I read that wrong. They can. Should have worn my glasses. So visit doihaveprediabetes.org and take a short test because prediabetes can be reversed.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Welcome back to Healthy Review. Thank you for joining us today. This next half of the show is a segment that we like to call Ask Chris and Beth. These are questions from our listeners. We'll read them out, and Beth and I will talk about them a little bit. Beth, the first question comes to us from Aaron Rodriguez. And Aaron asks, what do you suggest for warm-up and cool-down exercises?
You know, Aaron, the best kind of warm-up before a workout is a few minutes of cardio, like maybe jump roping or jumping jacks or even walking. We were just talking about walking, followed by dynamic stretching. We were just talking about dynamic stretching, which is stretching with movements. I know a few years ago, we were taught to sit or stand and stretch one muscle group at a time, and that's really not a beneficial way of stretching. I mean, you can really isolate that muscle and stretch. But when you stretch, static and dynamic stretching is best performed after a workout when your muscles are really, really warm and loose. So I'm going to say the best kind of warm up is jump rope, jumping jacks, walking, a little bit of dynamic stretching. And that's going to be the best, like, pre-workout. And then after your cool down, I'm going to say get your heart rate down a little bit. The same thing. You can just like walk in place. You can jog. You can walk. But then I would say, again, stretching. And then maybe even some static stretching would be best after your workout. So that's what I'm going to say.
Well, I find too, as I get older, it's more important for warming up and cooling down. And I would throw, you know, stretching into that routine.
Absolutely.
Especially, you know, my Achilles area after a jog or a walk, if I don't properly stretch those before or after, I can really feel a burn and almost feels like a tearing away.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. Every now and then. And I was as a weekend warrior out, you know, showing the young kids how to play football, I felt as though I was still, you know, NFL material at age 43. And a lot of stopping and starting on the hard pavement and really injured my Achilles to a point where I couldn't walk for a few days and really made jogging. Mm. But so, you know, I guess there might be a little something in that, you know, as we get older, that, you know, our minds, like I said, say one thing, but our bodies say something else. Now, it was refreshing. Of course, my son is much more active than I am. I mean, I bet he takes 30,000 steps a day compared to my 10,000.
Good for him.
But he started playing basketball for the first time a couple of months ago, and just being on that hard surface and the stopping and starting that's involved in basketball and the jumping, he had a little problem with his Achilles. And so it made me feel a little bit better about myself, but also
there you go.
Bookmark,
there you go.
Note to self, it's important to stretch and warm up and cool down at all ages. So.
Now, have you ever tried the kinesiology tape that's so popular now?
No, but I've seen it on a lot of the athletes. It really became popular, really I noticed it for the first time in the Summer Olympics. A lot of athletes have that. Tell me more about that.
And It's just a tape that it's kind of like what you would think if someone puts a brace like on their wrist, if they have, you know, maybe start of carpal tunnel or something like that. But it's really good to immobilize and help those muscles. So on your Achilles, I would actually recommend you buying some of this Kinesis tape. You can get it Walmart, you can get it at Target, you can go to Walgreens and put one on each side of your Achilles. That's what I would recommend. I think kinesiology tape is so underrated. I actually have two boxes, one in my gym bag and one in my laptop bag. I keep it with me. That's how much I believe in it.
Awesome. You know, there's one other thing I would add to your gym bag are Band-Aids. Sometimes, especially after a new pair of shoes, you wear that blister into the back of your foot, and that will that little blister will
suck. Oh, that's no fun.
That'll bend you for a couple of days. So.
Yes, it will, my friend. Yes, it will.
All right.
Band-Aid. And kinesiology tape.
Absolutely. All right. So we're going to have a full bag here pretty soon. The second question comes to us from Annabelle Hopkins. And the question is, I have a huge appetite and am always hungry. It's not emotional eating either. I've tried every gimmick out there and nothing has helped. If you have any insight into appetite control, please share them. Interesting question.
You know, the first thing I know, first of all, we all love to eat. I mean, come on, eating is fun, especially if you have that cupcake or that cookie or whatever is your comfort food. But I'm going to first say, stop trying to do something magical or gimmicky, because that stuff never really works. Beyond that, a few tricks to help you feeling fuller would be eating lots of low-calorie food that are high in fiber, or maybe even taking a prebiotic, which is a fiber. You can take some prebiotics, maybe three, before every meal to help you make yourself feel fuller. Drink tons of water. I mean, if you feel that you're starving, just drink a pound of water or a liter of water and see if that helps kill the urge a bit. And then I would also ask how you're sleeping is, because we all know that leptin and ghrelin are two hormones that regulate appetite, and they both are directly affected by how much sleep you get. So if you've ever had a sleepless night followed by a day or even two, no matter how much you ate, you never felt full or satisfied. That's because leptin and ghrelin together, they actually kind of work as a checks and balances system to help control feelings of hunger and fullness. And ghrelin is produced in the digestive tract, which stimulates appetite, while leptin is produced in the fat cells and sends signals to the brain when you're full. When sleep is restricted, leptin levels go down and ghrelin levels go up. So basically, you're never going to have that appetite hormone in check. So that's another reason to get at least 8 hours of sleep a night. Sleep can also trigger the release of cortisol, which is a nasty stress hormone that's responsible for storing abdominal fat. So again, if anyone thinks that sleep isn't important just for, you know, mental clarity, it's also really, really important for, you know, helping yourself be healthy physically and not overeating and weight gain. So those are kind of my three tips. And then I would ask, are you sure it isn't emotional eating? So next time you're really, really hungry, or you think you're really, really hungry, stop yourself from heading to the fridge and ask yourself, you know, the following questions. When's the last time I ate? Was it more than 3 or 4 hours ago? And that's kind of a reasonable amount of time for us to go without food. Is my stomach growling? Am I lightheaded? And, you know, and those are answer those questions. And then see if you're really, really hungry or if you're engaging in emotional eating. So those are my tips.
Well, several of my steps over the weekend on Saturday and Sunday came from me walking from the bleachers to the concession stand. And probably that was probably a little bit of stress and emotional eating. So I didn't do the nachos. My new regimen and my new routine of walking during the game as I watch it, I'll burn those calories off. I feel good about it.
So. I know. How can you turn away nachos from a ball game? Right?
I know, especially once the cheese on top congeals, and it just, cheese should not be that yellow, I don't think. So, I don't know. But it is really, really good. So,
yeah.
Well, listen, on that note, why don't we wrap things up for this week? Thank you, Beth. And especially thank you to our listeners. Please join us next show on March the 7th, where we'll be interviewing comedian and best-selling author Lorna Landwick. In the show, she'll be discussing reading and humor and how good for the soul, how good it is for your soul and health. Wow, that's going to be a very interesting show.
I know. If you haven't read any of her books, oh my gosh, just look her up on Google her. And she's funny. I've read, oh my gosh, 8 of her books. I'm a huge reader. And I just cannot wait to have her on. I'm so excited. I'm so excited. So it's going to be a great show. Everyone has to come back.
Well, we can't wait. Join us for our next show on March the 7th, where we'll be interviewing comedian and best-selling author Lorna Landwick. In this show, we'll discuss how reading and humor can be good for the soul and your health. Super interesting. Thank you for joining us today, and we look forward to having you back on the 7th. The information provided in this show should not be a substitute for professional medical advice. These shows are for educational purposes only, and if anyone has questions about their health or wellness, they should reach out to their doctor.